106.6.
Okay, that was Labby Siffrey with It Must Be Love, and this is a DVD Fever show with me, Dom Robinson, and on Manchester 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and news for all three. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and has recently had a revamp, so please do take a look. If you've got anything else to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. What's going to be in the first hour? We've got the Woman on Blu-ray review of that. Top 10 movie charts. A look at the new cinema releases out this Friday. Some new DVD releases and Blu-rays out this week. And also some film news. And also in the studio with me today, we've got Jamie Kilday.
Afternoon. How are we doing? You okay?
Yeah, doing all right. You?
I'm very well. I'm very tired on this Tuesday afternoon, but I'll wake up, as I'm sure, as the show goes on.
As the day goes on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. It's always a good way to start the week, having listened to some stuff about films, video games, and TV.
I think so. I think I found the right place to wake up, haven't I?
You have indeed, yeah. So we're going to have a look at this film called The Woman on Blu-ray, which is a film I'd never heard before I reviewed it. Have you heard of it?
Just The Woman?
Well, yeah, it's just called The Woman.
Well, I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover, so I'll listen, but I'm not too enthusiastic about the title so far.
The title needs some work. But basically, The Woman begins with the appearance of a grubby woman's midriff on screen and her stroking her blood-smeared stomach. As the camera zooms out, we see she's been stabbed and is trying to clean the wound. Portrayed by British actress Pollyanna McIntosh from Exam and Burke and Hare, her name is unknown and she's simply referred to here as The Woman. And she's the last remaining member of a violent clan that has roamed the northeast coast for decades. Lawyer Chris Cleek, Sean Bridges, stumbles across her while out hunting in the forest and finds himself endlessly staring at her through his sights. He looks a mild-mannered type, but at the earliest opportunity, he throws a net over her, knocks her out, and strings her up in his garage. Despite his initial violent actions, it's amusing when he then starts poking around in her mouth to check out her teeth, at which point she sinks them into his ring finger, bites it off, chews it up, and then spits out his wedding ring. The remainder of the family is made up of Belle, Angela Bettis, his very much put-upon wife, plus her daughter Peggy, Lauren Ashley Carter, who is rather a loner, and the son Brian, Zach Rand, who fancies a girl in class who's better at shooting hoops than he is, so he gets her back by putting chewing gum on a hairbrush, causing her to rip out some hair in class when trying to use it. He's a nice chap, isn't he?
Sounds lovely.
Might see what comes next. Back to the head of the household, though, and Chris is clearly a redneck idiot who thinks this woman can be trained back to civility and thinks nothing of introducing her to the whole family, including his young children. As the film continues, Peggy becomes an increasingly insular teenager. Brian can clearly only think of their guest in a particularly sick and twisted way, and Chris's actions have to be seen to be believed. The final third of the film is outstanding beyond belief. Without going into detail, since to describe a lot of what makes this film great would spoil the plot, The Woman has a fantastically intriguing premise, with Pollyanna McIntosh putting on a brilliant performance as a nomad being brought back to reality with a crashing bump, and the family cast similarly excel in their roles, more so than you think on first seeing them. It's the kind of movie you'd expect to have come from a foreign director and it getting a US remake a couple of years down the line, rather than it being an American made from the start, having been filmed in Massachusetts. But it really does come across as compelling viewing from start to finish. It's in the original cinema ratio. Picture looks crisp and clear throughout, perfectly bringing to screen both the dank interiors of the cellar and the lush green outdoors of the Cleek's farmland. It's also brilliantly well filmed throughout, with tight use of camera shots. Audio-wise, the film is presented in DTS 5.1 Master Audio, and some exceptional sound effects at the points where the woman eats his finger, and later on involving a gunshot ringing in someone's ear. It's also punctuated by some fantastic songs which just pump out of the speakers from scratch and without warning, resulting in a scene that looks more like a bizarre music video, and one of them featuring degrading scenes with the woman. There's a few extras on the disc. We've got the making of, which is about 25 minutes, which is a featurette looking at the locations, such as the Factor High School baseball court, double for the cellar, would you believe? Pollyanna's extensive makeup, and also the detailed gore during the film. Chat comes from all the key cast members, plus director Lucky McKee, production designer Krista Cole, and several other crew members as well. There's also deleted scenes, just three of them. Nothing that demands to be put back in the film. There's also a segment called Meet the Makers, which is a very brief featurette for a movie programme called Chiller. Not half as insightful as the making of. This is for those with short attention spans who don't want to watch that full segment. There's also a weird short film called Mi Burro, which is a bizarre animation about a Spanish lad and his selfish womanising horse, the pair of them being cigar smokers. There's also a Film 4 Fright Fest total film panel discussion, which is about 43 minutes long, where they've got the deputy editor of Total Film talking to the director and a number of others at the Film 4 Fright Fest in August this year. Finally, there's a music video, Distracted by Sean Spillane, which is about 5 minutes, and it's a song used during a particularly vile scene in the film. So overall, I'd give the film 8 out of 10. Picture and sound's a good 10 out of 10. The extras, 4, because they're just a bit average. Overall, an 8. So if I tempted you to watch that one?
Sounds like you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It sounds like the last... It's worth the payoff, because I think the name The Woman sounds pretty dull. And so you go... If you're going through the list... Because normally when you go to like Blockbuster or go to buy a film or anywhere, other places are available. Normally you go just off the name, or you'll see someone who's a character or a member of the cast who you recognise.
Yeah.
Which I don't think you'll recognise the main girl, really.
Not necessarily, no. It's not, but not with
all
the
makeup. And the title isn't great. But it seems to be a good film. It's just a shame it hasn't set itself up for being one.
Indeed. It's very, very violent, and I really did enjoy it.
It's a shame it's a bit too late for Halloween, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would have been ideal.
But still worth a look.
Cool.
But, okay, so I'll have a bit of music now. We've got Davy Graham and No Preacher Blues. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was No Preacher Blues by Davy Graham. And you're back with the DVD Fever Show, me, Dom Robinson, on 106.6. And we've got Jamie Kilday in the studio here with me.
Afternoon.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad, How are you, Dom?
I'm doing all right, yeah. It's a good afternoon, isn't it?
It's lovely.
Can't see what the weather's like, though. Can't comment on the weather because we're in a studio.
That could be a good thing, or it could be a bad thing.
Yeah. I think it was changeable when I saw it. Would you say it's changeable, the weather?
So that means it could be anything.
It could be anything.
Good.
Yeah, that's good. Anyway, back after the weather chat, we've got some movie charts for you now. And I go through the US movie charts here, as I can never find a reliable source for the UK ones, with the Internet Movie Database being particularly hit and miss, and the Rotten Tomatoes site not being ideal either. But anyway, so the first... Well, the film that's in number one, got Puss in Boots, which has taken $34 million in the box office in the US. The story takes place before Puss, Antonio Banderas, met Shrek and Donkey, when he was a swashbuckling hero who protected the innocent. The film starts out with Puss escaping from a man who had had him in a cage. He narrowly manages to get away, and after blowing kisses to the female cat he was leaving behind, he makes his way to a town. After being taunted and then gaining the respect of the thugs there, Puss learns that the two murderous outlaws, Jack, Billy Bob Thornton, and Jill, Amy Sedaris, have the magic beans, which hold an ancient power that can destroy the world. When Puss tries to take them from the two outlaws, another cat with a mask interrupts and tries to get them as well. Both fail and escape, and Puss follows the cat back to a bunch of other cats, where they both have a dance fight and a sword fight, ending with Puss smacking her over the head with a guitar, which upsets the cat so much that she rips her mask off and reveals to a surprised Puss that she is in fact a woman. Puss then meets Humpty Dumpty, Zach Galifianakis, who introduces her as Kitty Softpaws, Selma Hayek, named because she can take anything without even noticing them, that they are gone, as she frequently does with Puss's hat, boots and money, simply to tease him, and asks him to join them in finding the beans, planting them and getting the golden eggs which lie at the top. Now, for me, I got a couple of laughs out of the trailer, but anyone who's heard me before on this show will know how much I dislike CGI films for kids. They just seem so lazy, so I'm not going to be watching it. Are you into...
Why don't you like CGI films for kids?
CGI films, they just completely wash over my head. Just absolutely nothing going on for me.
You don't like Shrek?
No, I've never...
You don't like any of the Pixar work?
I've never managed to... I think I've seen bits of things like, you know, Toy Story and whatnot, but I've never actually managed to sit through a whole one. I just...
Unbelievable. Toy Story is amazing. I can't believe you can't... You can't tell me... Oh, move on.
Otherwise, we'd be here to one talking about it.
Yeah.
Number two, we've got Paranormal Activity, which has taken $18.1 million. That was in its second week of release, and it's the third of the film series and serves as a prequel, so 18 years prior to the events of the first two films. In 1988, young sisters Katie and Christy encounter an invisible entity haunting their home. Although it appears friendly, it turns hostile, tormenting the young girls and their family. A scene near the start of the film, which is based before the second film, features Katie bringing over a box of videotapes to the home of her sister Christy. And after leaving, Christy starts to sort through some of the tapes, all this being filmed by her husband Daniel. There's no one famous in it, but it stars Katie Featherston as Katie, surprisingly. Sprague Garden, a weird name, as Christy Ray.
Sprague Garden?
Sprague, S-P-R-A-G-U-E, Graydon. Sprague Graydon. Oh, go on, Graydon.
Right, okay.
Spray the Garden.
Spray the Garden.
Yeah, I remember she played the daughter of the president in 24.
Oh, right,
in
okay.
One of the penultimate series, I think. She didn't really impress me much, to coin a song. She plays the other girl, Christy, and Brian Boland as Daniel. Now, I've not seen the first two films, so they didn't grab me, and this doesn't entice me either. But the trailer has some great bass in it towards the end, which gave my subwoofer something to think about. So what do you reckon to the Paranormal Activity films? Have you watched any? Or
I watched the second one the other day. I was made to watch the second one, and I got about an hour into it, and I thought, is anything going to happen in this film? I was just watching it, and just thought, they're all prequels, aren't they? The second one was a prequel to the first one, and the third one's a prequel to the second one.
Ah, right, is that how it works? I didn't, because I don't see the first two.
Yeah, so they just seem to be... I think the second one ended quite... The first one must have ended... In a way where they went, oh, well, I can't carry this on.
Yeah.
So we'll just keep going backwards and backwards and backwards. Eventually, it'll be like Paranormal 50. And it'll be set in the 1800s or something. Don't know. I'm not into my scary films.
No, these things are cheap to make as well, aren't they? That's why they just knock them out at one a year or something like that.
Yeah. It's very... Every time I watch Paranormal Activity, I just think it's just a poor man's Blair Witch Project. And a Blair Witch Project was cheap to make anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Also at number three, we've got In Time, which has taken $12.1 million. Welcome to a world where time has become the ultimate currency. You stop aging at 25, but there's a catch. You're genetically engineered to live only one more year unless you can buy your way out of it. The rich earn decades at a time, remaining at age 25, becoming essentially immortal, while the rest beg, borrow or steal enough hours to make it through the day. When a man from the wrong side of the tracks is falsely accused of murder, he's forced to go on the run with a beautiful hostage. Living minute to minute, the duo's love becomes a powerful tool in their war against the system. Starring Justin Timberlake, Amanda Seyfried and Cillian Murphy, this certainly has an intriguing premise and sounds like it's worth checking out, but I just don't rate Justin Timberlake as an actor, and the trailer all looks a little too light. Mark Kermode said it made the Adjustment Bureau look like Inception. And Adjustment, I thought, was superb, and Inception was just fantastic. So it doesn't bode really very well for In Time. What do you reckon? Does that film sound like it's attracting you?
Is it basically Logan's Run?
Yeah.
Is that what I'm hearing? It's just Logan's Run, but with 5 years earlier.
Yeah, like, and the chance to go on to live longer. Well,
so that's Logan's Run. Logan's Run. And it is basically like someone sat, watched Logan's Run and thought, we can't do a modern Logan's Run. So we'll just tweak it a little bit and make a newish film. And the premise looks good. If it wasn't for the fact that Logan's Run already exists, I probably would go and watch it, but just a bit, I don't know. And I hate the whole, a man from the other side of the tracks meets a gorgeous rich lady. And you go, oh, well, some originality, please. Come on.
Yeah, it does need some of that. I know they were going to talk about, they wanted to remake Logan's Run at some point. I don't know whether that's going to happen now. Number four, we've got Footloose. Number five, The Rum Diary. This is a film based on the novel of the same name by Hunter S. Thompson. Directed by Bruce Robinson, filming was done in Puerto Rico in 2009, and marks Robinson's first film as a director in 19 years. His prior film being Jennifer Eights, released in 1992. Paul Kemp, Johnny Depp, as an itinerant journalist who grows tired of New York and America under the Eisenhower administration, and travels to Puerto Rico to write for the San Juan Star. Kemp begins the habit of drinking rum and becomes obsessed with a woman named Sheno Amber Heard. Now, watching the trailer, there's a lot of laughs to be had in all the right places, but I don't know whether it really seems to hang together as a movie, so it wouldn't be my first choice for the cinema. Are you attracted by that one, or...?
I watched Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas over the weekend, and it's one of my favourite films, and that's based on a Hunter S. Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's basically his life, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm always intrigued when it comes to Hunter S. Thompson, and he's a very interesting character, so I might check out The Rum Diaries. Footloose, though, that one can sling it. I'm not interested in Footloose.
Can foot off. Yeah.
Can foot off, yes.
Foot off. That's the best thing we can say about that, I think. Number six, we've got Real Steel. I only saw the trailer of that. It just seemed to boil down basically to robots beating each other up and nothing about any part of the plot, presuming there is one. But Mark Overmby said that it's not a load of rubbish like Transformers, although the trailer didn't give that impression. It just didn't look any different to me. Unless I can find something to convince me otherwise, I'll just be giving that one a miss. Has that one attracted you? Or
Hugh Jackman is an interesting guy, because Hugh Jackman only works with... He went through a stage of just going, I'm only going to work with directors that I trust.
Mm-hmm.
So he only works with... He won't do a project with somebody if there's another director, basically.
No.
So that kind of has a bit of credibility in it. But then when you watch Wolverine, you go,
yeah,
maybe not.
It's not.
But I really like Hugh Jackman. I think he's a good actor. So I haven't seen Real Steel, but... It looks like a kids' film, but I can imagine it being a good kids' film.
Yeah, yeah. So it's worth a look, perhaps. Number seven, got the Three Musketeers. Decided to remake that again. Then we've got number eight, The Ides of March, which I do want to see that. It's got George Clooney in it. Number nine, Moneyball, which is all about American baseball, so I can't see that making an impact over here anytime soon. And number 10, Courageous. Okay, so that's your top 10 movie charts, and in a moment we have a look at the cinema releases out this Friday, but I'll have a little bit of music coming now from OMD and Maid of Orleans. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was OMD with Maid of Orleans, and you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6, and we're here again with Jamie Kilday.
Afternoon.
Oh, you all right?
I'm very well. I'm waking up.
You're waking up slowly.
I'm waking up now.
Slowly.
Slowly but surely, we're getting there.
That's good. In this section, we have a look at the cinema releases, starting with The Immortals. These are all out this Friday. Oh, by the way, if you want to see any of the trailers for these, just go to the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Okay, The Immortals. Eons after the gods won their mythic struggle against the Titans, a new evil threatens the land. Mad with power, King Hyperion, Mickey Rourke, has declared war against humanity, amassing a bloodthirsty army of soldiers disfigured by his own hand. Hyperion has scorched Greece in search of the legendary Epirus bow, a weapon of unimaginable power forged in the heavens by Ares. Only he who possesses this bow can unleash the Titans, who have been imprisoned deep within the walls of Mount Tartarus since the dawn of time, and thirst for revenge. In the king's hands, the bow would rain destruction upon mankind and annihilate the gods. But ancient lore dictates the gods must not intervene in man's conflict. They remain powerless to stop Hyperion until a peasant named Theseus, Henry Cavill, comes forth as their only hope. Secretly chosen by Zeus, Theseus must save his people from Hyperion and his hordes, rallying a band to fellow outsiders, including visionary priestess Freda, Frida Pinto, and cunning slave Stavros, Stephen Dorff. One hero will lead the uprising, or watch his homeland fall into ruin and the gods vanish into legend. I don't know, superhero movies, superhero type movies are for you, then you might like this, but this one sometimes they're okay, but this one just looks way over the top for me. Have you seen a trailer for this at all?
Is this the one by the directors of 300?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like watching 300, isn't it? You see the trailer on TV, and they proper ham the trailer. During the football, me and my brother were watching a City match on ITV, I think it was, and it was just every advert, like every time I went to an ad break, it was for this film. And every time we'll try to pick out more faces that we recognised in the film. We're just going, oh, right, we've got Mickey Rourke, right, the next one, we'll see who else we know.
Yeah.
We're going, like, the cast's good, but I just think I'm getting a bit tired of this whole 300-esque
Yeah,
the Clash of the Titans, and they just seem to be just off the back of 300. They've gone, oh, let's make these epics that are shot in this certain way. And when you watch it, you go, oh, it's shot in the same way that 300 was shot.
Yeah.
You go, oh, if you like 300, I'm sure it's good, but I just think
enough is enough.
Yeah, they just I get the feeling that the cinema seems to rehash itself too often. Right, 300 wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, it's only a few years, isn't it? So, time to move on to something else in the meantime.
Hopefully the story's good.
Yeah, well, only one way to find out.
I know.
To go to the cinema.
That's how they get you. That's how they get your money.
I also got Arthur Christmas, and Arthur Christmas reveals the incredible never-before-seen answer to every child's question. So how does Santa deliver all those presents in one night? The answer, Santa's exhilarating ultra-high-tech operation hidden beneath the North Pole. But the centre of the film is a story about a family in a state of cosmic dysfunction and an unlikely hero, Arthur, with an urgent mission that must be completed before Christmas morning dawns. Basically, one child has missed out, and Arthur is the only one available who can take Santa's sleigh to deliver his presents. This one is definitely for kids, not least because of the CGI. But let's we get into that argument again.
Another bone of contention for yourself there, Dom.
Also got Wuthering Heights. It's a new version of the classic tale directed by Andrea Arnold, starring Kea, I can't pronounce her surname, Scodelario. I'll hazard a guess at that. I think she's in Skins, perhaps. And James Howson as Catherine and Heathcliff, respectively. The screenplay, written by Andrea Arnold and Olivia Hetreid, is based on the Emily Bronte's 1847 novel of the same name. A poor young English boy named Heathcliff is taken in by the wealthy Earnshaw family, put my teeth in, where he develops an intense relationship with his young foster sister. So it's just a like dynasty with John James and Emma Sams when they turn out to be brother and sister after having a relationship. The trailer is almost dialogue-free, and it's certainly interest-free, so I'm definitely going to pass on that one. You know, give that a miss.
I think so. I think there's enough better films out there for me to go and see without having to go and see that one.
But it's the kind of thing that, you know, your missus might drag you along to, do you think? Or it's kind of a, sounds like a chick flick, really, doesn't it?
No, I don't think my missus is going to drag me to the cinema to watch it.
You wouldn't go anyway.
I'll drag my heels too much for that one.
Yeah, you just put your feet in concrete and then you can't get out of the house. We've also got Trespass. Kyle Miller, Nicolas Cage, and his wife Sarah, Nicole Kidman, and daughter Avery, Liana Libretto, are taken hostage by extortionists, and a cycle of betrayal and deception emerges in the pressured conditions. The film has received extremely negative reviews from critics. Trespass holds a 13% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, with the consensus stating, another claustrophobic thriller that Joel Schumacher can churn out in his sleep. Trespass is nasty and aggressive, more unpleasant than entertaining. Now, Trespass was a box office disaster, and based on a budget of $35 million, the movie grossed less than $25,000 and was pulled from theatres after only 10 days. Now, going by the trailer, it looks like there could be some entertainment to be had, but then Joel Schumacher could be having one of his off days. You never know. I mean, you only, like the other film, you're only going to know by seeing the whole movie.
$35 million.
It's not bad for a film these days.
Oh, but to only get a quarter of a million back.
Well, no, 25,000.
To only get a 40th of a million back. Jesus Christ.
It's not good, is it?
It's a poor show. 25 grand, that's all it grossed back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to make its money back even by, you know, by the pay per view or DVD.
Poor.
Yeah, it's not looking good. Can't be any worse than Batman and Robin.
That's
though.
Like a fiver a ticket. That's 5,000 people have been to see that film.
Yeah, and word of mouth quickly spreads.
Yeah,
no, don't bother.
No, even less people are going to watch it if they listen to this show.
Well, yeah. I don't know, Nicolas Cage, he seems to be in every other film that gets released, so you can always skip over to that one to the next one.
Don't get me started on Nick Cage. Move on.
Maybe we'll have Nick Cage out in the second hour, but we won't. One of the film out this Friday, The Awakening, and 1921 England is overwhelmed by the loss and grief of World War One. Hoax exposer Florence Cathcart, Rebecca Hall, visits a boarding school to explain sightings of a child ghost. Everything she knew unravels as the missing begin to show themselves. Also starring Dominic West, Imelda Staunton, John Shrapnel and Joseph Moore, this is another film that's been derided in the US, and the trailer looked rather a mess. Shame is it's got an otherwise good cast. Is that, have you seen any trailer for that? Or
The Awakening?
Yeah. No. I mean, again, it sounds like a title that's been used about a million times as well.
Yeah, there must be about 1,000 Awakenings.
Yeah. Not that one with Robin Williams and, what's his name, Robert De Niro.
Was that another Awakening?
Well, yeah, Awakenings, but that was about not coma patients or something like that. But yeah, nothing to do with this sort of horror kind of nonsense. Yeah, it's just one to miss.
It's not waking me up.
No. On this fine Tuesday afternoon.
Of course.
But, okay, well, that's your new cinema releases out this Friday. I'm going to have a bit of music now, and we've got Beautiful South and One Last Love Song. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Beautiful South with One Last Love Song. And we've also got, well, this, sorry, back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Tom Robinson. And this is I mentioned 106.6. I'll get my teeth in at some point today. It's one of those days.
You are a bit gummy.
Sorry?
You are a bit gummy.
I'm a bit gummy.
Yeah.
I need a gummy bear. Probably had too many of them in my time.
Possibly.
And what's back with Jamie Kilday? Hello.
Hello. How are we doing?
Not too bad. Well, wants to get my teeth in and my mouth working, as you tend to need doing the radio show. The DVD's out this week. We're going to have to start with The Lion King in 3D. Ooh.
I can imagine this is something you're very excited about, Dom.
Yeah, I am, yeah. It just seems to be CGI Kids Film Week this week. The wait is over. For the first time ever, experience the majesty of Disney's epic animated masterpiece as it roars off the screen and into your living room on Blu-ray 3D. With a spectacular digital picture, spine-tingling high-definition sound and immersive bonus features, you'll feel the love for this critically acclaimed and university-beloved classic like never before. Embark on an extraordinary coming-of-age adventure as Simba, a lion cub who cannot wait to be king, searches for destiny in the great circle of life. You'll be thrilled by the breathtaking animation, unforgettable Academy Award-winning music for Can You Feel the Love Tonight, and timeless story. Well, it's timeless because they keep bringing it out every year. The king of all animated films reigns on Disney Blu-ray 3D, magic in a new dimension. I think that description was written by Disney, do you reckon?
Magic in a new dimension.
Mm.
That's awful. That's
it is.
That ruins everything about it. Magic in a new dimension.
A special feature, we've got bloopers and outtakes. How you get bloopers from a cartoon, I don't know. Unless someone broke their pencil. Audio commentary, backstage Disney, including deleted and alternate scenes, and play movie with a sing-along mode. Ooh, I think that's just called subtitles.
No, because it'll have a little man or a little ball bouncing on the words.
On top.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's how you differentiate between karaoke and subtitles.
Ah, right. I understand now. I didn't before. We've got Beautiful Lies, where Emily, Audrey Tautou, puts all her heart into running a busy hairdressing salon in sunny south of France. Meanwhile, her mother, can't speak, Natalie Bay, has had her heart broken and needs love. When Emily starts receiving anonymous love letters, she decides to send them on to her mother, sparking confusion, complications and dilemmas when the secret admirer, Sami Bujalia, is revealed. Beautiful Lies is a refreshing comedy of errors from the director of Priceless and the star of Amélie and Coco Before Chanel. Special features on this one include an exclusive interview with Audrey Tautou and the UK theatrical trailer. I can't remember if I've seen the trailer for this one. So have you heard of this film before?
No.
No? Should we move on?
Yeah.
Nice to see something a bit different. We've got it's called the COI Collection, Volume 6, Worth the Risk? ? I've no idea what COI stands for, but you'll get the idea of what it's about when I come to it. Health, safety and welfare messages are at the heart of the sixth volume in the COI Collection. Crossing the road, sensible drinking, playing with matches, the welfare state, combating terrorism, how you do that, I don't know. Not for the average man in the street, anyway. Decriminalisation, crime prevention, surviving nuclear attack.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like getting under your chair and putting your head between your legs and kissing your bottom goodbye. And much, much more. All tackled here with the usual mix of horror, humour, shock tactics and gentle persuasion. Highlights include Skateboard Safety from 78, the pioneering animation of Charlie's March of Time, 1948, So You Know to Strangers from 81, starring Timothy Spall, and the unnerving Cold War-era film Hole in the Ground from 1962, in which warning and defence measures against nuclear attack are depicted.
So are these like infomercials?
Yeah, basically.
Back in the day?
Yeah, because they release DVDs like this every now and again. And they must sell, because they're up to number 6 now. But
That's number 6 in the charts?
No, number 6 in the collection.
Oh, right, okay. Of course.
I can't see this getting number 6 in the charts. Or anywhere near the top 10. But it's like I've got a DVD somewhere that's got like 150 of these things on. And it's quite amusing when you see how they... It's like those ones from the 80s, where like telling you what to do in event of a nuclear attack, as if you'd even have any hope in hell of surviving.
Yeah, the humour comes in the ignorance, doesn't it?
Yeah.
When they try to tell you to do something, and now the more informed we are, years on, you go, actually, that's...
It's not going to work, is it?
That's not good advice at all.
You can't sit in your front room, put, like in threads, put like a duvet, or no, whatever they're called, the thing that goes up, the thing that you sleep on, a mattress, that's it, up against the wall and trying to crouch behind that. That's not going to stop a million megaton bomb, is it?
It's not.
No.
Oh, no.
No.
You always rethink my plan then.
You always paint yourself white to deflect the blast. Unfortunately, the rest of your body will just go the other way.
Yeah, this is true. And you might die of lead poisoning.
Yeah, that's true. Good. Yeah. Get some lead-free paint. That's our tip today.
Good. Win-win. Nuclear wars, win-win.
Indeed.
Evidently.
It's got special features. Furry folk on holiday, 1967. Tufty and his friends take a trip to the seaside. Luckily, policeman Badger is on hand to save the day. Play Safe from 79. In this long-form version of the classic COI public information film, Bernard Cribbins and Brian Wilde warn against the dangers of playing near electricity. Well, that was quite a funny one, that one, actually. Especially when the kid fried. It's a fully illustrated booklet with USA's biographies and notes on the soundtrack. We've got It's a Wonderful Life, a 65th anniversary edition. Now, perhaps the most beloved American film, It's a Wonderful Life, was largely forgotten for years due to a copyright quirk. Only in the late 70s did it find its audience through repeated TV showings. Frank Capra's masterwork deserves its status as a feel-good communal event, but it's also one of the most fascinating films in American cinema. A multi-layered work of Dickensian density, George Bailey, played superbly by James Stewart, grows up in the small town of Bedford Falls, dreaming dreams of adventure and travel. But circumstances conspire to keep him enslaved to his home turf. Frustrated by his life and haunted by an impending scandal, George prepares to commit suicide on Christmas Eve. And then we all know that the heavenly messenger shows up to show him a vision of what the world would be like if George had never been born. And then everything just works out all happily ever after, doesn't it? Basically. Have I spoiled the plot for you? Have you not seen it?
I haven't seen it, no. Just thinking there's still hope for that Joel Schumacher film. That didn't get success instantly. Maybe it might do through successive reruns on late night cable channel.
So someone like shows in the error of his ways and what it was like if Joel Schumacher had never directed a film.
Yes.
What would the world be like? I couldn't live without Flatliners. I do like that film.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, I've not seen Flatliners.
No, I haven't seen a lot of films.
It's fantastic. I love Flatliners. It's just one of those absolute, for this time of day, I'll just say mind flip films, and it just absolutely sends you. Oh, I love it, love it. It's one of the few films that Julia Roberts I can watch without wanting to make me scream because she can't act for toffee. But the rest of the cast is great, and it's top stuff overall. So there.
There we go. Don't watch anything else. Just go and watch Flatliners.
Yeah, just
that's
watch Flatliners.
The recommendation from today's show.
Oh, and Falling Down, that was a good one he did.
Oh, is that his as well?
Yeah.
I've seen Falling Down.
Yeah.
Falling Down's very good.
I know, I love that film. Other films out this week, got Lucio Fulci's Gates of Hell trilogy, The Light Thief, The One, Panic Button, and Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. Some TV series out this week, we've got Land Girls Series 2, Michael Bentine's Potty Time Series 4, Miranda Series 2, along with a box set of both series. Supernatural Season 6. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea Series 4. And Wallander Collected Films 21 to 26. Also got some Blu-ray premieres out this week. We've got The Cider House Rules, Copland Collector's Edition, The Exterminator, French Can-Can, The Nutcracker 3D, Scrooge from 1970, Starsky and Hutch, that one with Ben Stiller, Strictly Ballroom, and Wings of the Dove. So, I think out of those, Copland, that was not too bad. Seen that one?
No.
No?
There's a running theme on this show, isn't there?
Yeah,
I haven't seen an awful lot.
Not seen all of, well...
No, but there seems to be a lot for consideration out this week.
There is indeed. There is indeed. Okay, so that's all your DVD release out this week. In a moment, we'll have some film news. First of all, have a bit of music. I'm going to have John Cougar Mellencamp and Jack and Diane. This is Manchester's 106.6.
106.6.
That was John Cougar Mellencamp with Jack and Diane. And here for the last part of the first hour with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson. And now we've just got time for a little bit of film news, just taking us up to the top of the hour. And we've got the news that the new Bond film has been named. Sony Pictures held a press conference on Thursday to announce details on the 23rd James Bond film. First up, Sony confirmed the title would be Skyfall, which sounds a bit sci-fi, but it's a billion times better than Quantum of Solace. As for the title's meaning, producer Barbara Broccoli says it has emotional context which will be revealed in the film. The press conference was also attended by director Sam Mendes, co-producer Michael G. Wilson, and cast members Daniel Craig, Javier Bardem, Judi Dench, Bernice Marlowe, and Naomi Harris. The official James Bond Twitter, 007, tweeted the logline, "Bond's loyalty to M is tested as a pass comes back to haunt her. As MI6 comes under attack, 007 must track down and destroy the threat, no matter how personal the cost." Film also stars Ralph Fiennes and Albert Finney and is due out in November next year. Here's some major details about the film. Bernice Marlowe is a new Bond girl. At the press conference, it was revealed that her glamorous, enigmatic character is named Severin. Naomi Harris says her character's name is Eve and that she's a field agent. There was no mention of the previous report that she was playing Moneypenny. For those wondering, Moneypenny's first name is Jane in Ian Fleming's novels. Marlowe says she's been learning to fire guns, and Harris says her prep works include doing yoga 3 times a week, stunt driving, firing machine guns, stunt training, jumping out of cars, and running up and down stairs. Skyfall doesn't relate to any existing property, so it's a standalone story and doesn't connect with the first two movies. So much for Quantum. The world wept. Okay, so that's all your everything to do with films for this week. I'm going to have some start off with some, well, the second hour we've got some video games and TV stuff for you. So we'll have a bit of music going up to the top of the hour. We've got A Flock of Seagulls with I Ran. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Celine Dion even with I Drove All Night, and you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. I'm back with the second hour of the show today. Starting off with video games, we've got a review of the Sega Dreamcast Collection on Xbox 360. We've got the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, plus some video games news. On TV side of things, we've got a look back at what have we got? Well, you'll see what's coming up in there. Actually, we've got, was it Holy Flying Circus? And also look at Top Boy. That's it. I remember now. Look ahead, some more programs coming up, and also some TV news. So we start off with a review. Now I'm going to do part one this week, because this goes on so long, of the Sega Dreamcast Collection on Xbox 360, because the Dreamcast Collection is 4 Xbox Live Arcade titles brought together in one package. The fun begins with Crazy Taxi. Just those 2 words tell you all you need to know. You know the game, you know if you like it, and you know if you don't like it, then you clearly have no souls. It's one of the most wonderful arcade games ever created. This home version features both arcade and original ways to play. However, both say play by arcade rules and offer 3, 5 and 10 minute options, which makes it confusing. There's certainly no discernible difference between the two, other than that the original mode seems to be a bit more generous with the time remaining. In addition, there's a Crazy Box mode, a series of challenges starting with jump past the K point, for which you'll need to achieve a crazy dash along the way. This involves pressing the drive, i.e. forward gear button, just before accelerating. Practice and you'll get there. To get further, try a limit cut, reverse, drive and accelerate. Time it right and you'll get the burst of speed that you need. What are the downsides to this release? Well, some will bemoan the fact that the graphics haven't been updated and are just a port of the original game. That may be so, but they still look, you know, just damn good, and they haven't dated at all for me. There's something to be said about not tinkering with a classic, and so I'm glad they're unchanged. What has changed, and what really does irritate, is that there's none of the original music from the game, which is rather a big disappointment, as you couldn't beat a bit of The Offspring's All I Want. That was an iconic tune for the game. It wouldn't have hurt to include a custom soundtrack option. Crazy Taxi is worth 8 out of 10. It would have been 9 or 10 with the original soundtrack. Why couldn't Sega have licensed that? Second game, when it comes to Sonic Adventure, which is more of a curious oddity for me, it was one of the first Sega Dreamcast games to be released. It is also the one that is much more of a case of style over substance than the others. There is a plot to it that revolves around the seven Chaos Emeralds, but after a mostly enjoyable opening level, came a bit of running about to bump off, Dr. Robotnik, which involves a lot of jump about, bash the baddie, run around and do it again, rather like the opening fight with the blue Chaos Zero character. After a lot of faffing about to put a windstone onto a special pedestal by the waterfall, you then get access to the next action scene at Windy Valley. However, while the 3D is all well and good and looks very nice, and I'm generally one for the old school of Sonic and prefer the 2D originals, I have to say that the camera angles are all over the place, and thus the playability drops like a stone. The fact that something is quite irritating to play after a while, just gets more repetitive, is not something that endears you to it, and thus it only scores 4 out of 10 from me. Next week I'm going to cover the other two games in the package, which are Space Channel 5 Part 2, which is a UK premiere, and Sega Bass Fishing. Okay, in a moment we'll have a look at the top 10 games charts and also some new video games releases coming out this week. First of all, we'll have a bit more music and we have the Staple Singers and Everybody Will Be Happy. This is 106.6. 106.6. That was the Staple Singers with Everybody Will Be Happy, and you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And in this section, we're going to have a look at the video games charts, the top 10, starting with the top 10, obviously. Starting with number 1, Battlefield 3. Number 2, we've got Batman Arkham City. Number 3, it's FIFA 12. Number 4, Football Manager 2012. Number 5, Just Dance 3 Special Edition. Number 6, Forza Motorsport 4. Number 7, The Sims 3 Pets. Number 8, just going nowhere out of the top 10, it's Zumba Fitness. I mean, that was number 1 for absolutely eons. Number 9, Skylanders Spyro's Adventure. And number 10, Rage. I've got that for review recently, so I'll get a review of that for you in due course. That's come from the same people who made Quake and Doom, so I'm really looking forward to that. Also, new releases, we've got Kinect Sport Season 2, that's 18. Number 23, we've got Dragon Ball Z Ultimate Tenkaichi. Number 34, we've got Dance Central 2. Number 35, we've got The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn. And number 37, Ratchet and Clank, All for One. Okay, also some new video games releases out on Friday. We've got Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. Now the player assumes the role of various characters during the single player campaign, changing perspectives throughout the progression of the story. Each level is a mission that features a series of objectives that are displayed on the heads-up display, which marks the direction and distance towards and from such objectives. Damage to your man is shown by the blood on the screen, and your health regenerates as time passes, and you'll be accompanied by troops who cannot be issued orders. Tasks vary in their requirements. Having the player arrive at a particular checkpoint, eliminate enemies in a specified location, stand their ground to defend an objective, or plant explosive charges on an enemy installation. Boasting multiplayer map packs, memberships, in-game unlockables, and one-of-a-kind book on many of Call of Duty Modern Warfare's untold secrets, the Hardened Edition is a definite experience for the Call of Duty fan. The Hardened Edition includes the game disc itself, featuring unique disc art, a one-year Call of Duty Elite membership, which includes, you can get all the future Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 downloadable game content, including map packs. You get a special founder status on Call of Duty Elite, which includes an exclusive in-game emblem, player card, weapon camouflage, clan XP boost, and more benefits. There's also a premium collectible steelbook case, exclusive Special Ops Juggernaut Xbox Live outfit, and limited edition collectible field journal chronicling the entire saga with 100 plus pages of authentic military sketches, diagrams, and written entries. Also, we've got Assassin's Creed Revelations. Now, when a man has won all of his battles and defeated all of his enemies, what is left for him to achieve? Ezio Auditore must leave his life behind in search of answers, in search of the truth. In Assassin's Creed Revelations, Master Assassin Ezio walks in the footsteps of the legendary mentor Altair on a journey of discovery and revelation. It is a perilous path, one that will take Ezio to Constantinople, the heart of the Ottoman Empire, where a growing army of Templars threatens to destabilize the region. In addition to the culmination of Ezio's award-winning story, a refined and expanded online multiplayer experience returns with new and additional modes, maps, and characters, allowing you to test your slaying skills against others from around the world. The only game I've played in this series was the first game, and that was disappointing in a number of ways, such as the fact that if you were even attempted to go for a swim, you would instantly drown. What was all that about? And also, there's atmosphere to being in Altair's world, it really jarred when he brought you crashing back to reality in the lab in the present day. Why not just leave us with Altair? That would have been so much better. I understand that some of the gameplay elements were fixed for the sequel, Assassin's Creed 2, but I didn't realise that at the time, so gave that a miss, as well as the third game, Brotherhood. The trailer for this game looks superb, though, so I'm going to try and get this one for review. You can see the trailer for that on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. One last game that's out this Friday. I've got the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim. By the way, all these games are out on Xbox 360, PS3 and PC, with Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 coming out on the Wii as well. Skyrim's main story revolves around the player character's efforts to defeat a dragon god who is prophesied to destroy the world. Set 200 years after Oblivion, the game takes place in the land of Skyrim, in the midst of a civil war after the assassination of the king. The open-world gameplay of the Elder Scrolls series is continued in Skyrim, as a player character can explore the land at will and ignore or postpone the main quests indefinitely. Now, role-playing games are not my bag, so I'll be giving this one a miss, but if you enjoyed the previous four games in the series, then you're going to buy this one for sure. So that's all your video games releases in the top 10. Everything's out this Friday. In a moment, we have a look at some video games news, but first, with a bit more music, I'm going to have Freemasons featuring Sophie Ellis and Heartbreak, Make Me a Dancer. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Freemasons featuring Sophie Ellis and Heartbreak, Made Me a Dancer. We're back on the DVD Fever Show, me, Dom Robinson, and we're over here also with Jamie Kilday. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I've had a coffee now. I'm more awake.
You feeling a bit better now?
I feel a bit better, yeah.
That's good. Ready to talk about some video games news?
No.
No?
No.
You're into video games?
Yeah. I spend too much time on video games, so this is going to be my element, I suppose.
Oh, fantastic. Well, hopefully this first bit of news will impress you. Grand Theft Auto 5 could be released next summer, according to analysts. The game's recent announcement will ensure a long enough time for marketing into next year, according to industry gamers. We believe Rockstar Games is modelling a 4 to 6 month marketing window for their upcoming GTA 5 release, suggesting a summer 12 launch period, said National Alliance Capitalist Markets. Wedbush Securities' Michael Pachter agreed, saying that Rockstar Games would want to steal everyone's attention with a June release before next year's E3 Expo. Also, EDAR's Jesse DaVinci added that the trailer and announcement this month was to detract from the current busy release season. Enjoy your AAA-packed holiday, but remember who's your daddy, he said. Rockstar North is one of the most talented developers in the industry, and when they speak, everyone listens. Rockstar does what they want, and when they want it to. Grand Theft Auto V's first trailer has now been released, confirming it will be set in Los Angeles and will feature planes, mountainous environments, and poverty as an ongoing theme. Are you looking forward to that one?
I am. I've kind of got into Saints Row, so I didn't play GTA 4.
Oh,
but I did play Saints Row and kind of got onto that. Saints Row is a lot more fun than GTA.
I never actually played a Saints Row game.
They're like Grand Theft Auto, but they've there's a more of a fun element to them. Yeah. Grand Theft Auto 4 was really serious, and you couldn't really do the sort of messing about that you could in the early Grand Theft Autos, which was kind of the fun of Grand Theft Auto, that you could kind of do anything.
Yeah.
Whereas 4 kind of condensed it a little bit, because there's going to be there's a new Saints Row coming out. Which yes, I think I'm slightly more excited about than the GTA new 5. GTA 5.
Mm.
But everything it says about Grand Theft Auto 5 is they've learned a lot from people's feedback of Grand Theft Auto 4, so fingers crossed it'll be a good one.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I don't know whether the graphics will be as much of a leap from 4 to 5 as it was from 3 to 4, because like 3 was like on the PlayStation 2, and then you got like whole next generation consoles to jump between them, but see what we end up with.
So that was the strange thing, though, wasn't it? There was Grand Theft Auto 3, and then they had Vice City and San Andreas, and then they had 4.
Yeah,
so technically, number 4 is about number 20, really. If you go back to the original Grand Theft Auto,
that's that's true. We've had Chinatown Wars as well. That was on the like little sort of handheld consoles, yeah, on PSP. Phones. Yeah. So it wasn't bad. It's also the news. We've got that Angry Birds has been downloaded 500 million times. Fans of the action puzzle title have played the game for a cumulative total of 200,000 years, with an average of 300 million minutes played daily. Meanwhile, over 266 million levels have been played, over 400 billion birds have been launched, and around 44 billion stars have been collected. Quite how they've worked all that out, I don't know, apart from random guesswork.
No, they'll probably know from all the figures that you get are saved on your... If you've got an iPhone, like if you... Like, my phone died. Like, yeah. I had to reset the phone. But when I plugged the phone into my computer, it reinstalled
everything. Brought you back to where you were.
Yeah, yeah. And all the levels I'd got up to were Angry Birds. We were all redone. So obviously, it's saved somewhere.
Stores it all somewhere. Well, that's a bit, I didn't realise it did that. That's a bit Big Brother-ish, perhaps.
You say it's a bit Big Brother-ish. What they do with that information of how well you are at Angry Birds, yeah. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough.
But I am very good at it.
It's a fantastic landmark achievement for us, and we're extremely delighted to see such an incredible amount of people enjoying our game, said Rovio CEO Mikkel Head. We remain committed to creating more fun experiences and bringing exceptional quality to Angry Birds fans everywhere. Originally launching on the iPhone in 2009, Angry Birds has since been on major smartphone devices, PC, Mac, and web browsers, and PSP. Also the news that Nintendo holds back more 3DS games until 2012. According to Computer and Video Games, Nintendo president Satoru Iwata told investors that new titles needed to be given room to breathe in order to maximise sales, before admitting that too few 3DS games were offered at launch. Video games need to stay fresh, so it's not practical for us to put them on hold too long. But we think that some of them may be held for a certain amount of time so that there will be a short interval between when they are completed and when they are launched, he explained. We are taking on this sort of challenge for the Nintendo 3DS. For example, when we look at the software lineup for the year-end sales season, it is so dense that if we added any more software, the total sales would not increase. Accordingly, we have intentionally delayed the launch of some software titles to early next year. We failed to offer strong software titles without long intervals in the first half of this year, but it was not because we did not place importance on offering them one after another. Games such as Super Mario 3D Land and Mario Kart 7 are scheduled to be released before Christmas, while the likes of Kid Icarus Uprising, Animal Crossing and Luigi's Mansion 2 are expected in 2012. The 3DS will see a firmware update later this month, adding 3D recording, video recording and new Street Pass content. Okay, so that's all your video game stuff for this week, and we'll have a look at some TV stuff in the last half hour of the show, starting with TV programmes watched in the past week. But we're going to have a bit of music now, and we've got Old Fashioned Morphine from Jolie Holland. This is 106.6.
106.6.
That was Jolie Holland with Old Fashioned Morphine, and you're back on the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Rumson, and my special guest this week, Jamie Kilday.
Hello, thanks so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Thanks very much
really
for coming.
Enjoying it. Thanks so much.
Cheers, thank you. Now, this Tuesday afternoon, we're going to have a look at some recent TV programmes that have been broadcast. Now, when my last show was on, one thing that was coming up at the time was Holy Flying Circus. So, I've got a review of that to start off with, and then we'll have a look at Top Boy, which is on Channel 4 last week. So, Holy Flying Circus, in 1979, Monty Python made Life of Brian, and the debate about what is acceptable subject for comedy was blown wide open. It's a fantastical reimagining of the build-up to the release of the film and the controversy it caused. It starred Darren Boyd, Charles Edwards, Steve Punt, Rufus Jones, Tom Fisher and Phil Nickel. Now, the basis of it was that Life of Brian was ready to be released, and the BBFC wanted to give it an AA rating, which meant it could only be viewed by anyone of 14 or over. This wasn't acceptable by a large group of people, and wanting to get Life of Brian banned for blasphemy reasons. And then they turned up several times throughout the first half of the drama, led by Mark Heap, who took the complaint to the councils, who got the certificate turned into an X, causing the Pythons to collectively refuse that, and so it wasn't shown at all around the majority of the country. Cleese and Payton were shown going on Friday night, Saturday morning to talk about the film and its reception. There's also some of the usual Python touches, such as men dressing up as women to play female characters on some occasions. We also had some Monty Python-style animation in some scenes, plus an appearance from some aliens thrown in for weird measure, along with an argument between Cleese and Palin, which turned into a fight scene between two puppets, one holding a lightsaber. Also, there's another surreal moment, like a man in the present complaining about a character in the programme using a derogatory reference about Joey Deacon, but only because the programme is set in 1979 and Joey Deacon didn't appear on Blue Peter until 1981. Overall, I quite enjoy the Python's films and a lot of what I've seen of the TV series, but it sounds like this is the kind of thing where you need to be a massive fan of Monty Python culture. An hour would have been pushing it, but in 90 minutes it just really started to drag to the point where I was just waiting for it to end. Eventually, it did. Did you watch any of that?
No, but I am a massive Python fan. I'm a really big fan of the films.
Mm-hmm.
But this kind of went under my radar a little bit and I didn't catch it.
Yeah, they just like stuck it away on BBC 4. Would have been better to stick it on BBC 2,
I think it was on before The Life of Brian. And I watched The Life of Brian on BBC 4. But just didn't pay attention to what was on before it. I did the same thing last night when I was watching some documentary about Nirvana. Before it, they had Nirvana... A gig. I was like, oh, I'd much rather sat and watch the gig than watch the documentary about the movie. Yeah. Ah, well, there you go.
It's one of those things, isn't it?
Hmm.
Something else that was on last week, we got Top Boy. Now, featuring an ensemble cast of brilliant new talent, Top Boy is Ronan Bennett's new four-part drama about young people living on the edge and, for the most part, out of sight in East London today. Thrilling, raw and frightening, and sad and hopeful, and surprisingly funny by turn, this original drama is an honest and gripping rendition of inner city life set in the world we think we know, but that most people rarely see or understand. On London's summer house estate, lives are lived along lines, and challenges come in all forms, especially for kids. 13-year-old Ryanell finds he has to step up and be a man when his mother, Lisa, has a breakdown and is hospitalised, however you pronounce it.
Hospitalised. Yeah, as in hospital, not a hospital. Oh, I'm going to the hospital.
You're listening to Pronunciation 101. On 106.6.
You overpronounce the spit. You underpronounce the spit.
I'm spitting too much, aren't I?
You are, a little bit.
Yeah, I'll try not to spit too much so that other people have got to use this microphone later on.
This has become a proper Radio 4 programme now, hasn't it? This is how to pronounce hospitalised.
It's also stars Sharon Duncan Brewster, Kirsten Waring, Ashley Walters and Jeff Bell. Now, it started off with Duchesne, Ashley Walters and Sully, Kane Robinson, losing their food, a.k.a. stash of drugs, to a gangster called Kamali, who, when one of them was on their own, just drove up, pointed a gun and took it. Then there was Ryanell, a young lad who gets in the world of the dealers, while his mother Lisa ended up in hospital after having a nervous breakdown. Duchesne and Sully got to control the estate, a.k.a. Summerhouse, by doing a favour for the big boss Rakes, by literally breaking off the finger of the lad who poked it in the eye of the boss's daughter, which caused her to end up with a glass eye. However, they get their drug stash taken a second time by Kamali. Kirsten Waring, just about to give birth, is running an extensive hydroponic setup in a flat, with plenty of weed growing over a three-month period, which she'll then sell to dealer Benedict Wong. In the second episode, Duchesne and Sully kidnapped a relative of Kamali's, but when attempting to knock him out and stick him in the boot of their car, they ended up accidentally killing him instead. They also made friends fast with Rake's second-in-command, Lee, who turned out to be the one tipping off Kamali to take their food, so Duchesne and Sully bumped him off. The weed that Kirsten was growing, instead of being sold to Benedict Wong, it was sold to Duchesne when Ryanell thought he knew what he was doing by organising the transaction on their behalf. But in the end, it was stolen by him and Sully, and when Ranel's uncle Leon showed up, he ended up taking a bullet for it, and the weed was gone. Overall, Top Boy had a lot of promise, but I just thought it was just dragged out far too long. Over 4 hours, well, minus adverts. It just dragged and dragged. Apparently it's going to end up being cut down to a feature-length version for foreign markets, so at least it'll get a wider airing, but it could have been a whole lot better, I thought. Do you see any of this? Or?
Didn't catch it, but Twitter was mad for it. Everyone on Twitter, I think it was just trending. The first episode was trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Benedict Wong fan. I really like his stuff. He was in 15 Stories High with Sean Locke.
I saw a bit of that, and then I didn't quite grab me at the time. And
he was in Sunshine, the Danny Boyle film.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that, yeah. I remember that.
And he's also in Moon, which is one of my favourite films.
What did you do in Moon? Can I remember?
He was only in it. He wasn't in it massively. He was only a small part. To be honest, you didn't even know he was in it. But it was only because I was on IMDb and I was like, "Oh, he was in Moon." Oh, but yeah, he's in that.
All right. I mean, Moon, I love Moon. It's a fantastic film. But if you're going to watch Moon, I'd say don't watch the trailer first, because I thought it just gave everything away.
No, yeah, that's a good point. Just watch it anyway, because we're telling you to.
Yeah, just go and watch that. Mm. Sunshine, I thought that was good for the first two thirds, and then it just sort of ended up falling apart a bit.
Petered out a bit.
Yeah, I just went a little bit mad.
Mm.
But that's all. Well, that's TV reviews. I've got some stuff coming up in the following week. But I have a bit of music first. We've got Joss Stone and You Had Me. This is Manchester's 106.6.
106.6.
That was Joss Stone with You Had Me, and you're back with the DVD Fever show on Manchester's 106.6. And my special guest this week, Jamie Kilday. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad,
That's good. You've woken up now.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit. I don't think I'll ever truly be awake. I think I'm always going to be in this sort of stupor.
Semi-comatose, something or other.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right then. Now this section, still continuing with the TV stuff, and we have a look at some programmes coming up in the coming week, starting with Rev Series 2, which is a sitcom about a vicar running an inner city church. The Reverend Adam Smallbone's life in his London parish hasn't got any easier. His flock are just as demanding, and his wife Alex has reached breaking point. So when Adam unwittingly thwarts a mugging, he's tempted to bask in the novelty of being hailed as super vicar instead of his usual clergy baiting, and enjoy Alex's renewed attraction to her hero husband. But as the lie spirals out of control, Adam draws attention from on high. Now, it stars Tom Hollander, Olivia Colman, Steve Evans, Miles Jupp, Lucy Lehman, and Simon McBurney. Now, I love the first series. It had some clever writing and some nicely underplayed comedy, so this one comes highly recommended from me. Do you see Rev when it was on last time?
I'm beginning to start as a little trendy, yeah. No, I didn't see it. But it's got good cast in it, though.
Yeah, it's got a good cast. It's got a cracking cast. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I didn't think it was going to be as good as it was. And it sort of surprises you. So, yeah, so I'd really recommend that one. Also, we've got that's on Thursday at BBC Two at 9 o'clock. Now, coming after that, 9:30, we've got Life's Too Short, which is a comedy series featuring Warwick Davis, who was in Willow.
It's been lots of things. He's in Harry Potter. He was in Willow. He played an Ewok in the Star Wars films.
Oh, he mentions that in the trailer. He makes a point of mentioning that. I've never seen a Harry Potter film.
You've not missed out on much. Not in my opinion, anyway. No.
The only one I want to see is the third one, Prisoner of Azkaban, because it was directed by Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, it's the one decent one.
That's the one decent one, that's good. Because I love Children of Men. Yeah. There's loads of one-take shots in that one, which I really enjoyed. So are there any one-take shots in Harry Potter, or is it all just...
I can't remember for the life of me, but he's one of my favourite directors.
Yeah.
And Children of Men was on TV the other day, and it's very good, very good film.
It is, it gets like a good airing around the ITV channels quite a lot, so it's worth catching. So in Life's Too Short, with his career on the slide, a massive tax bill, and his wife divorcing him, showbiz dwarf Warwick Davis is forced to open his doors to a film crew 24/7. He seeks advice from old pals Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, but Liam Neeson has beaten him to it. Also starring Joe Enright and Rosamund Hanson, I'm intrigued by this, as Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant can often get a TV series spot on, such as with the extras and The Office. I find it's when they introduce Carl Pilkington into proceedings that it tends to fall apart. What are your views on Carl Pilkington?
I like Idiot Abroad. I just think sometimes he overplays the idiocy and it becomes a bit ignorant. And you're just a bit like, actually, this is quite, not offensive, but just in some cases you just go, right, you're not really respecting these cultures. You're just genuinely being blind ignorant. But I think it's very funny. I quite like Carl Pilkington. But I think it's not as real as people suspected it might be.
It's partly him, partly playing it up for the cameras, you think?
Yeah, I think it's all scripted.
Yeah, I suppose it'd have to be really, but...
Yeah.
I know there are people who think that it is all him, but I suppose that's the whole point about... Yeah, the character you play.
I prefer the podcasts.
I don't know. I think the only time I've seen any of that is when they had the cartoon thing on Channel 4.
Yeah, I really liked that.
I watched. I think I might have made it through one episode, and then I switched it off. But I suppose you have to like the podcast before.
Yeah. We'll have to agree to differ
yeah.
on this situation.
Oh, lots of things, including CGI films. also on, we've got this week, we've got Comedy Lab, Cabadasses, which is on E4 Sunday at 11 o'clock. Bobby is a lovable dreamer with high hopes and no prospects. When his domineering girlfriend, Shobna, throws him out, Bobby finds himself back at his dad's with his tail between his legs. His father, Latte, the Thamesmead cappuccino king, disapproves of Bobby's slacker lifestyle and thinks his dear departed wife spoiled the boy. Bobby and his best mate, Vin, a thug with a heart, decide that their best shot at redemption is to set up the world's first all-white English kabaddi team. Obviously, with a makeshift squad and no idea of the rules, Bobby realises they need help. They find it in the shape of the Marauding Moustache, a legend in the East London League and a cross between Mr. Miyagi and Homer Simpson. Now, this is the last in the series of Comedy Lab, and while I've been away, Channel 4 has sneaked them in under the radar by sticking them on so late on a Sunday night as if they were embarrassed by them, because there were three like shown together previously on like a Friday night, just coming straight after the Comedy Showcase series. And that stopped after three episodes as well. But, I mean, yeah, the rest of the Comedy Lab series for me hasn't been exactly stellar. I say the Comedy Showcase series, that has yet to return. But Ben Miller was on Breakfast recently saying that his pilot with Alexander Armstrong, Felix and Murdo, will air in the new year. Have you been watching any of these comedy pilots?
As far as I'm aware, they're getting rid of Comedy Lab, aren't they?
Yeah, it's
they've kind of pushed it to its limit. I don't think you can get any a much worse slot than the last show on a Sunday night.
Yeah,
before so I think they've literally just gone. I don't think Channel 4 are getting out of it what they intended they were going to get out of it in the first place.
No.
It's a shame, really. It's a good step, I think, for good young actors and producers in comedy.
Yeah, and they've also got Comedy Showcase for that, but I suppose that's more tends to have more established people in it. Well, especially if it's got Armstrong and Miller.
Yeah.
In it, yeah. Okay, so that's some TV stuff that's coming up. That's on Sunday on E4 at 11 o'clock, if you're still awake by then. I'm going to finish off with some TV news in a little while, but first we'll have a bit of music. We'll have Simple Minds and Stars Will Lead the 106. 106.6. That was Simple Minds with Stars Will Lead the Way. And you're back for the last section of the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, and my special guest this week, Jamie Kilday.
How do?
How you do? You still all right?
I am still okay, thank you, Dom.
Yeah, that caffeine hit has really worked, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's given me a buzz.
That's good.
Just for the final bit of the show.
Excellent. Now, first one, I'm going to try an impression. Basically,
don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, I will do it.
Okay.
Radio 4 orders a panel show hosted by Giles Brandreth. Wordaholics will be hosted by Giles Brandreth, the comedy writer, entertainer and one-time MP who has made frequent appearances in Countdown's Dictionary Corner and a regular on Just a Minute. The commission follows a non-broadcast pilot which was recorded at the Geological Society in November 2010 with Milton Jones, Jack Whitehall and Natalie Haynes. Radio 4 describes Wordaholics as Giles Brandreth is joined by four fellow Wordaholics for the panel game that tests your linguistic knowledge and makes you laugh your socks off at the same time. Guests set to take part in the full series include Haynes, plus stand-up comedians Jenny Eclair, Richard Herring and Alex Horn. My throat's going dry. Wordaholics will be broadcast on Radio 4 in early 2012.
It's not a bad impression. Yeah. I was expecting a lot worse.
No, thank you. That's praise. what's got the news? Back to myself. A film adaptation has been announced for Benidorm, so it's going to be hitting the big screen soon. Having been written by Darren Litton during its first four series, a fifth run is currently being filmed with contributions from other writers and production company Tiger Aspect are now on the lookout for A-list stars to continue the show's tradition of top-name cameos for a big-screen outing. Big names to have appeared in the TV series to date include Confessions film star Robin Asquith, Cilla Black, Georgia Mildred's Brian Murphy and Louis Spence. And Joan Collins is expected to appear in Season 5. A source purportedly told the Sun newspaper, "The show's creators don't want to make a big screen version just for the sake of it. They want to make sure the high standard is maintained." The fifth series is expected to broadcast early in 2012, with the film, if it does go ahead, hitting screens in 2013. Production company Tiger Aspect, also behind films such as the big screen Mr. Bean adaptations, is likely to be hoping to recreate the success of the Inbetweeners movie earlier this year, which sat at the top of the box office for 4 weeks following its mid-August release. We've also got the news. Surprisingly, the 10 o'clock, I'd enjoyed it. The 10 o'clock live, the weekly satirical comedy show presented by Charlie Brooker, Jimmy Carr, David Mitchell and Lauren Laverne. It's returned for a 10-part series early in 2012. The first series, which launched in January 2011 and ran for 15 episodes up to the end of April, was met with a mixed reaction from press and public. The show also saw a slump in viewing figures, falling to around just 650,000 from 1.37 million by the end of the 15 weeks. However, at the time, Channel 4 moved to defend the show, pointing out that with 4OD and the repeats, it was averaging around 1.8 million. Broadcast on Thursday nights as an alternative to Newsnight and Question Time, the show featured Brooker, Carr, Mitchell delivering individual monologues, plus a roundtable discussion of the news and the following day's papers, chaired by Laverne. David Mitchell also hosted two interview slots during the hour, in which politicians and commentators were invited to share their opinions. Much of the press criticism focused on the hour running time, which stretched the writers, left the show covering too many topics in too little depth, and saw the intention of some wandering away towards the end, no doubt because Question Time, it clashed with that. They should stick it on at 9 o'clock so it doesn't. Make it easier for me, for one thing. Channel 4 appears to have taken note of the criticism, and the second series is going to be restricted to a 45-minute slot, including ad breaks. A spokesperson also told The Guardian that this will still allow for an in-depth look at the news stories, but will mean we're less dependent on the news cycle. There's also the news that when Charlie Brooker said he was doing the original 2010 election special, because he was just very, very nervous, he did an eighth of a teaspoon wee in his trousers. He said, just before he was due to start speaking, he said, fortunately, I was wearing black trousers and sitting down, so I got away with it. But inside my head, it was pure nuclear war. So as we come to the end of the show, did you enjoy the 10 o'clock?
Yeah, I'm glad it's coming back. I think a shorter show is probably preferred.
The way to go.
I think it did. I think they need to concentrate more on fewer issues and getting more laughs out of them than trying to spread themselves too thinly, which I think is what they were doing.
I agree with that. So if it's all better. I'd like to have seen them get rid of Lauren Laverne, but I think she was the only weak link in the chain. But anyway, that's everything for this week. So you got all the trailers for everything that you've heard about on this show, plus some gaming footage. That's all on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. And we'll be back same time next week. Okay, thank you very much, Jamie, for coming.
Thank you very much for having me on. Enjoyed it. Thanks so much.
Cheers, and we'll see you next week. Thanks very much. Just going to finish the hour with Squeeze and Up the Junction. This is 106.6.
106.6.